And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the only motorcycle road racing podcast with a mustache like a circus strongman. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. Ed is guaranteed to trim 12 seconds off your lap time.
Four.
No, 12. It's a very long lap. I'm thinking... I'm Michael Gugis. You can find me on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, and you can find my photos at motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com, but you have to wait until, well, no, I'll have it done by then.
That's the 78th time you've said that.
What?
I'll have it done by then.
Probably.
And this is show number 78.
Yeah.
Hey,
what?
What am I eating?
You're eating a sandwich.
Ain't it a great looking
sandwich? Yeah, we're recording. Why? Well, hold on. Eric wants to know if we're recording. Of course we're recording.
We're recording right now, Eric. You're live on podcast number 78.
Exactly.
Now shut up.
That was the whole thing about the circus strongman, the mustache.
I'm eating a sandwich. Where did I get the sandwich? I got it out of my motorhome's refrigerator.
Right.
Why was it in my motorhome's refrigerator already made? Because my wife, Catherine,
makes
me a batch of sandwiches and burritos to last the race weekends for me before I leave. Freaking cool.
How lucky
breakfast,
are you, dude?
I'm crazy lucky, right?
Oh, my God.
I left Hawaii to come over here to race, right?
Right.
And then I met Catherine and got
this.
Married 6 months after I landed here. I'm like,
man.
Oh, that's why I was
that's
really
why
coming
I was
over
supposed
here.
To be. You guys should immediately just head back for Hawaii. It's like...
No, they don't. The track's gone.
Doesn't matter.
No, it matters.
You have Catherine.
No, sorry. Yes, I have Catherine, but I also need a racetrack.
Oh,
and to
man.
Go with the sandwich,
right?
We are both drinking chocolate milk
from Lester.
Courtesy of Lester. Thank
right.
you, Lester.
Lester. I hope that where's the 125, dude? Get it back out on the track.
There's a kid here with a 125. He's like, right? I heard Lester was going to be here. Where is that sissy?
Right.
That's what he said to me today.
Why do I not think that's true? Because
I said it.
Because that kid looks like he weighs about 40 pounds, and I don't think he's calling anybody.
Much too polite to say that.
Oh man, what was I going to say? Where are we at, Ed?
We are in garage number one at Buttonwillow Raceway, drinking chocolate milk, making a podcast.
I think you got a tech customer, Eric.
Eric,
can you
take care
it?
Of him.
You are our hero.
I worked for Fast Track today. We did Fast Track Day. And then now we're a tech inspection because tomorrow is we're races. Tommy
exactly.
and I went out and set up the braking marker cones. And then Eric and Tommy and I have been doing tech. And we're ready to rock.
Yep.
The 250 Ninja is ready to crush. There's a whole bunch of R3s here that tomorrow are going to be sad. R3 owners.
Yes, but don't they still get money?
Well, they'll get a claim that my bike is actually an EX500.
Isn't there some kind of blue crew thing going on? There's some Yamaha contingency money.
Yeah, we're just signed up Yamaha.
Yeah.
For you race R3 two times, and then you can go to the GNF,
right.
And then you get prizes for the different positions. I think first place is a R3, which seems kind of funny because if you race in an R3, you have
already,
one, right?
Exactly.
But I mean, two R3s is better than one. Generator for second and a power washer for third.
Dude, middle of the night. Lightning storm, Dr. Frankenstein, you can make an R6.
You're right, R3 plus R3 is R6.
Know what, Ed? All I'm saying is that this is...
What do you do with the extra R? So it's an RR6?
Yeah, it's an RR6. It's even better than an R6.
R6R.
Yes, exactly, the race version.
So what's our topic today?
A couple things.
That's 5 minutes you're never getting back, people.
People are billing us for their time.
And make a time machine.
You know what? But hey, it's been a good day at the track. You know, we got to ride.
73 degrees.
It was beautiful
no
out
wind.
Here today.
You guys missed it.
And Buttonwillow, you know what? The repave isn't perfect, but it's
not
bad.
The repave was perfect. They run cars on it every damn day.
Well,
so now they're starting to get some bumps.
Okay, let's go with that. All I know is that it's, you know what, the big bumps in the middle of Riverside are not there anymore.
No, absolutely
and
not.
And that makes me happy.
The only bump that's coming back that's getting big is the bus stop bump.
Yeah, oh man.
But that just adds character.
Yeah, character? I slammed my fairing down and threw me sideways when I hit that
that's
early
what we call character.
Day. Exactly. Is that what character is when my sphincter slammed shut, heels over completely?
You've had too many sphincter dope jokes already. You got to move to something else.
Ed, is there so much? Is
there
such thing
yes,
as too many sphincter jokes?
Yeah, there are.
I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure I believe you. Anyway, two things. So, I was reading Crash.net earlier this week, a really interesting interview with Jonathan Rea. Kawasaki did something interesting in World Superbike, okay? Rea is crushing the field this year. When he's not finishing up front, either Davies on the Ducati or Tom Sykes, his teammate, is winning, okay? So Kawasaki figures, we're in really good shape. We don't, you know, we don't have a lot of real competition. The Ducati is good on Ducati tracks, but, you know. Anyway, so they introduced a new motor, or they changed something in the motor in between rounds at Imola, in between the two races. They were like, we got, you know, we're crushing it in the championship. We got a huge lead, so we're going to change something. And now Ray's complaining. He says the bike spins up too rapidly. It feels light. It feels too light. In the engine wise, and since then they've been working. He says we're working to get the heavier feel back to the engine, so it doesn't rev as quickly and it's not as spooky. And it's funny because I mean these guys, Jonathan Rea's good. He's extremely good at what he does. And it's really funny to hear them talk about, even at that level, the important thing, the most important thing in the race bike, being having it rideable. You know, having it rideable.
Oh, it's been proven and reproven over and over a billion times.
And factories keep forgetting it. And
they
tuners
do.
Keep forgetting it.
And the credible story about how Honda keeps forgetting it is that they keep having their new engineers work in the race department because it's more important that they learn this stuff and build proper street bikes, because that's where they make money.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that Kawasaki...
You would think that there'd like be a book of notes, or
right.
You could
exactly.
like watch the old race tapes and see that, you know, hey, we keep making motors with too much power that spin up too easily that only weirdos can ride.
Right.
Maybe we should build our stuff more like Yamaha.
And maybe Kawasaki could...
On the other hand, like you said, when they build the wild and crazy motor and chassis and it matches to the wild and crazy rider like Marquez...
10 in a row.
Right?
Yeah,
you can
right?
get some really good results.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, you just kind of wonder, why didn't Kawasaki note that? Why didn't they see it, you know?
A great example of how that goes wrong.
Okay, go ahead.
The car engineering world keeps looking at motorcycles. And the best example of this is, remember Ron Haslam riding the swing arm, the dual swing arm bike?
Yeah.
Right? Swing arm in front, right? The reason they make those is that the car engineers guys, they look at our telescoping forks and they go, are you kidding me, man? I can make that not dive and I can make that do this and that. And,
right.
And they go, okay, well, let's build it. And it does all of those things better, right?
And nobody can.
But it turns out you need the dive because you need the weight transfer.
Right.
And it turns out you need the flex because you need the lateral movement and you need the feel. And
right.
And the car drivers can't engineer a formula for feel.
Not only that.
And so they can keep making these same mistakes.
The guys winning the races have been riding on telescopic forks their entire careers.
Yeah.
You can't redo that. The better example, the more recent example, was the Ilmor guys that were going to build the MotoGP bike when we went to four strokes. They hooked up with Cosworth Engineering and they built a motor that on paper should have been killer. You know?
Except it was killer.
It was. Right. It just didn't work at all. You know?
That. So then to be more specific about, okay, you know, you're crushing the competition. Why are you screwing with the bike? Well, because you're afraid you might lose that advantage and suddenly not be crushing the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so better to keep trying to move forward.
Right.
And then sometimes when you do that, it's right, and sometimes it's less right.
It's better to do it when you've got a gap. And the funny thing, to me, one of the really funny things was if you looked at Sykes in the dry, he was just gone. It was hysterical at Sepang, because Tom Sykes has a reputation for jumping out to a big lead, burning up his tires, and everybody comes by him. Yeah, it was hysterical. Anyway.
He needs to watch that movie with the car racing, the NASCAR car racing movie.
Days of Thunder?
Days of Thunder, right?
Why?
They're bringing because the guy is like super fast, right? And then he goes and drives that NASCAR car faster than anybody else, but he always loses because he keeps killing the tires, right? And have the scene. So the crew chief guy, they go to some test track and they go, here, you do 10 laps your way. And then we'll do 10 laps my way or 50 laps, whatever, right?
Right.
And then the kid learns, oh, wow, at the end of the 50 laps, if I take it easy, I go faster.
Right.
Well, why can't Sykes watch that movie?
Does
it need British subtitles for him to understand?
It needs to be translated into lifts and lose.
You know, there's a great story out of out of whatchamacallit? I could do The Unfair Advantage with Donahue.
Yep. He Michael's worked, favorite book.
Oh, absolutely. He worked in a race tire shop, and they were looking for an unfair advantage. Put a set of tires on it to test them. Tires sucked for the first 5 laps, came in, and after 10 laps, they were faster than the tires that everybody else was running. He showed up at the race with this shit mounted on their car. Everybody's like, what are you doing? And they're like, sponsor, contract, you know. That was the last they saw this guy when the green flag dropped. It's funny how that works. But the trick is to finish the race in the least amount of time. Not do the first 10 laps.
Yes.
Not do the first 10 laps fast.
So one of the things you teach your new riders as soon as you can, look, dude, I'm really happy you got the track record. Except you then ran off the track, and it cost you 15 seconds. And so you lost the race by 5 seconds because this guy over here was going slower than you, but he didn't run off the track.
Right. Absolutely.
It's the total this time it takes to run the total length of the race, which is what matters.
Absolutely.
So what was your topic?
Topic? You know, it's May. We've seen a lot of new people here today.
Comes after April.
I'm sorry?
Comes after April.
Yes, and just before June, I think. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of new people out here. We've seen a lot of people, you know, some of us have been racing. This is not our first rodeo even this year. So I was thinking, you know, we talked earlier a few months ago about the stuff that you do in the off season to get ready, washing your bike, all of that.
So folks, just as a little aside here, Gouges is at the track with a new bike. He's got a Honda Hawk, and it's got white rims and new paint. Black bodywork, gold trim, looks nice. The motherfucker was sitting on the ground with a white can of paint and a little brush, painting up the chip marks. And I'm like, Michael, you never wash your fucking bike, and now all of a sudden you're fixing the chips in your white paint. What the hell happened? Who kidnapped Michael?
Travis came over years ago at the garage at Willow Springs. He goes, hey, Gouges, there's a speck on your bike. And I'm like, where? You son of a bitch. He probably put it there if I know Travis. Anyway, so other than cleaning up the bike, which is critical, absolutely critical.
I hear you say that, but I don't believe that you believe it.
You know what, Ed? I'm going to say it often
Although
enough
this
that
bike,
eventually.
It's like maybe you've changed.
I will eventually believe it if I say it often enough.
If you guys can't understand me well, it's because I stuffed my mouth with the last of this wonderful sandwich my wife made for me.
Hey, go Catherine.
And go Catherine. Thank you, Eric. And just a little tip, by the way. Did you see what's on the bottom of the lower? It's carbon fiber tape, 4 inches wide. You can buy it from Pep Boys, and it keeps that front little
heat
part.
Heat tape.
I'm sorry?
Is it heat tape, or is it?
No, it's actually.
To peel all the chips from on the chin
exactly,
part of the
Exactly, because I hate that. Oh, that makes me crazy. All right, I'm better now. I'm working my way through some issues. Anyway, other than cleaning the bike, I was thinking about what to check at this point in the season. And you know what got me thinking about this? You were doing a shock for me on an SV I had a few years ago. And you said, I was over at your shop. And you go, what do you want the length to be? And I said, I want it to be 330, I think is where I wanted them set.
And I said, where'd you get that number?
335. No, what you said was, I can't get it to that. And I was like, what? And I've been running this goddamn shock already because I got it from somebody who
Are you about to say that your mid-season thing you should do is make sure you get the right shock on your bike?
No. Hold on. I got it from somebody who had an SV. The shock came off of an SV. So I thought, well, it's got to be the right length. And it wasn't. So what I'm saying is the cool stuff that you put on the bike in the off-season, if for some reason, so far this year, things aren't going well, maybe it's time to check the stuff that you change.
It's funny you mention that because the guy that bought my 2000 TZ, Don Roberts, had an RS125.
Okay.
And it never worked right. He just struggled and struggled and struggled.
Okay.
And he finally figured out after years that he had like the 82 or the 92 shock on the 95 chassis, and they were like an inch and a half difference in length. It was massive. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you know, every time I saw a picture of him, it looked really short. Like,
right.
I mean, it didn't make it, it wasn't to my conscience, right? It was
right.
Only after the fact.
Right.
And so yeah, if you've got some weird shit going on, you might want to check that stuff out.
The stuff that you changed in the off season, anything, You changed preload. You changed anything with suspension, new tires. Even engine stuff can make a difference. Even engine stuff. We were just talking earlier about how important a smooth engine delivery is. If you built a whole bunch of horsepower into it, Anyway, just now's the time of the year. If it's not going well, double check stuff. Look again at stuff, and just make sure that it's actually where it's supposed to be.
So if you're not having a problem, what should you be doing now?
Cleaning the bike.
How about notes taking?
Very good, very good. Taking notes as you go around, as every time you come in, right after you take, right after you take your helmet and gloves off, but before you start talking to your friends.
Well, you need to get the warmers back on first.
Right.
Then you can take your helmets and gloves off.
Right.
Then you can drink some liquids. And then you need to make notes.
But it's before you have a conversation with anybody.
That's a trick, right? Some people, like the Chuckwalla racers, go to the track for the social reasons, what I call the social reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And if your purpose of racing is to hang out with your buddies and talk stories and have a beer afterwards and all that stuff, then do that. My way of going racing is to ride the most challenging, difficult circumstances I can as fast as I fucking can. And to accomplish that, I need to focus on riding skills and setup, and I have to have notes, and I have to gather data, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah. If you decide, when Tony Sarah says to me, look, man, I just want to ride around and have a good time, I go, okay, just try to move a little bit farther to the outside as you set up for turn one. That'll make it be a better time. Right? But you don't have to have the same amount of focus. So if your goal is to go really fast and you're not taking notes, then you're fooling yourself.
Makes sense.
If your goal is to go with your friends and have a few beers, just make sure the alcohol or other drugs are totally separated from the working on the bike and the being on the track part.
And the working on the bike part is too.
Drunk waiters working on motorcycles is hilarious TV show.
Geez.
But it's not good when they get to the track.
Oh, God.
They're like, have you seen my filler cap?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's on the bench at the house.
It's embedded in my fucking radiator, right?
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
what time is it?
Where are we at?
We're getting close.
Okay.
17.
Okay.
So we're at Button Willow, as we've said, and they're racing in Mugello right now.
Yes.
Right? Like the track, they say.
Right.
But I can't watch it very easily because I'm at the racetrack and my internet connection is not as good and all.
Okay.
So I made sure to watch all the pre-event stuff while I was still at home. Right.
Okay.
And I watched all of Friday's stuff before I left because it happens at 12 hours before. And then my connection, I didn't get to see anything this morning. Anyway, in the pre-stuff, they were interviewing Devioso, the guy who's staying with Ducati. Because the maniac is going to Suzuki because they didn't want that bullshit. And so they were talking to him, and they asked him, so what are you going to be able to help Lorenzo with? What things will you be able to tell him because the bike's new to him and you've been on it for 4 years or whatever? And, of course, he had the standard part about, well, that guy's pretty good, so I don't know what I'm going to be able to tell him.
Good.
Right? Some version of that.
Five-time world champion. He's not
but
bad.
The great thing was, so he gave that answer, and then they talked about something else, and he came back to that again, and he said something along the lines of, the fans are really different. The Ducati fans. But it's good.
What do you think he meant?
I think he meant the Ducati people are crazy, like we've said many times.
Oh, man.
Can you see a full-on nutcase Ducati, worst-case scenario? My bike is great because it's a Ducati person, right? That guy.
Right.
Talking to Lorenzo. Right? Can you see Lorenzo just looking at him like, fucking go away.
And the guy's like, no, let me explain to you a couple of things about how to ride a Ducati, right? Hey, I was on the hot grid, I was on the pits today, talking to, I pulled up next to a guy while we were waiting for something to get cleaned up or something. And the guy's like, he saw me looking inside the fairing. He's like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, first day out on the bike, I'm looking for everything, right? And like I mentioned, I don't have a fuel overflow hose on there, and it was dripping onto the cases. Once I figured it out, I quit. I could breathe again. Anyway, I said, anytime you're riding a 28-year-old motorcycle, you're looking for everything. And he starts laughing, and he goes, yeah, I got a Ducati, a 1963, a 250, what they call the Diana, right? Yeah, Tony had one, or something like that. He's like, it's in the middle of a full restoration now. I'm like, he says, I bought it brand new in high school. I'm
Cool.
That guy's kind of my hero. You know, that was pretty awesome.
Ready for the 2-minute
board? 2-minute board, hit it.
So, in the last episode,
yes,
we talked about the Mew content at Suzuka Circuit.
Right.
And Eric Moore of the Champagne on Tuesday fame,
okay,
sent me an email. He said Mew, M-U, is the Latin letter M.
Okay.
Mew, in engineering terms, refers to the coefficient of friction. Hence, very high Mew content.
So
high Mew content, i.e. high coefficient of friction, makes sense for a track with a high level of volcanic rock, igneous content.
So Mew content
is that Latin for coefficient of friction.
So it's just a big fancy 50-cent word way of saying the track has traction.
Rocks a grip. Yes, exactly. And then I remembered something else about that. You asked me about track surfaces.
Right.
And we were riding in the rain.
Uh-huh.
So the opposite of volcanic tracks would be Seattle International Raceway. It looks like river rocks, totally rounded out.
Right.
I remember the first time we were there, my friends and I looking, oh my God, this looks slippery like crazy. That's the first place I ever rode in the rain on a full wet tire and was blown away. And that track has great grip, despite the fact that it looks,
this looks terrifying.
Like literally polished river rocks. It's amazing.
So now you know Latin. Or at least
I know a word
in Latin.
Yes. Actually, you know? There's a lot of Latin in English because it's the root of a lot of English words because Latin was around first.
E pluribus unum, et cetera, so forth and so on.
Right. he's Michael Gugis with the multiple languages.
And he's Ed Sorbo. Aloha.